Yes, people, welcome back to another Cricket Talks episode. This is episode 18. I'm joined by Aaron. Aaron, how you doing, man?
I'm doing very, very well, Mo, to be honest. It's been another fantastic day of Test cricket.
Yeah.
Obviously, England versus India has been absolutely electrifying.
Yeah.
And then Pakistan versus South Africa delivered the goods, didn't it? It was a fantastic day five, in particular, if you're a Pakistan fan. Fantastic way to end a brilliant series and a great way to kind of set up an enthralling T20I series as well.
100%. Pakistan never make it a one-sided game, we know that for sure. But yeah, man, it's been good. This is episode 18. I can't emphasize enough, we're going to be doing a lot more live streams as well, so make sure if you guys want to tune in, you can be part of the episode. So just tune in live, send in your thoughts, give you a shout out, whatever you want. We might be on Stereo as well, which is a sick new audio exclusive app, so we'll be on there as well. But we're going to talk about this a lot more. Also, I've got some interviews coming up with county cricketers. Instead of doing them on Cricket Talks only, I did have a show set up called Breaking It Down. The podcast is going to be on Instagram right now. The Instagram handle is there. It's called Breaking It Down Pod. So make sure you follow that. I'm going to have all my interviews on there. So it's not just cricketers. We're talking American football athletes. We're talking entrepreneurs, all that kind of stuff, because I want to get to know the mindset behind all these kind of people playing sports myself. I want to learn different stuff. I want to provide motivation, inspiration for you guys and sort of thing. So all the cricket interviews as well will be on that Breaking It Down. Make sure you follow on Instagram, and yeah, that'll be coming very, very soon. So back to the interview, back to Pakistan. Yeah, like you said briefly, let's talk about the test. How did you find it overall before we dig into every day's play?
See, this is the thing. I love the test match. I think it was a properly engaging test match between two very good sides, to be honest, in terms of like evenly balanced sides, I'd say. The only
Yeah.
thing for me, I was a bit disappointed with the pitch itself. Considering the reputation of Rawalpindi, which is known as this seamer's paradise, I was
Yeah.
expecting a clash of the titans between South Africa's seamers, the likes of Onwrick Nokia, Kagiso Rabada, and then potentially a Pakistan, of course, Hassan Ali and Shaheen Shah Afridi. But you could have had the wild card, the X Factor himself, Harris Ralph.
Yeah.
I was looking
Yeah.
forward to that, and unfortunately, it was robbed of us. But in terms of the test match itself, had lots of ebbs and flows. I thought it was a fantastic contest. And to be honest, I credit to South Africa as well, because they took this contest far. They easily could have rolled after getting bowled out for 201. Aidan Markram and Rasib van der Dusen put up a fantastic riposte. And then day five comes along, Shaheen Shah Afridi, bit of swing, bit of reverse swing, and Hassan Ali, who of course we'll talk about in more depth as the
100%.
podcast progresses. But yeah, Mo, I bet you're feeling happy, aren't you, as a Pakistan fan?
100%. There's so many stuff I want to talk about. Well, we're not going to go too deep, but we are going to talk about it. But there's so many factors that just popped up during the test. We're talking about Hassan Ali coming back two and a half years out of the national side, let alone the test side, with a load of injuries and bad form leaving him out for a while. Worked his way back up, 100 in the Guardian Trophy final. Coming back, the expectations aren't massive. They're there because Hassan Ali did leave a mark while he was in international cricket. We're talking back, where he really was making his impact in Pakistan T20 series back in 2017, when Pakistan was ranked number one for a pretty long while, and then obviously the Champions Trophy, which a lot of people remember him for, when he was taking 3 wickets a game apart from the first. So yeah, Hassan Ali had expectations, but coming in to bring in that kind of performance, he helped a bit with the bat as well. So yeah, that was probably one of the standouts for me. And also something I want to point out is South Africa's play. I feel like the whole Pakistan playing in South Africa playing in Pakistan for last time in 14 years, all Fuad Alam, Mohammad Rizwan's knock, Fahim Ashraf, all, I think there's a lot of Pakistan stuff which has been had the limelight put on it, but not necessarily South Africa. I feel like a couple of players have gone, I feel like a few of the players are a bit underrated. I think Aidan Markram was not made as significant as it was. He made a very he had a very big knock, and he brought the game a lot more tighter than it should have been. So yeah, the game was very, very exciting. The Pakistan, like I said, never make it easy. Let's talk about the first day. We'll go through the scorecard very quickly. We won't dig into it too much, but obviously Imran Butt was put down. Themba Bavuma, this time he dropped him, but they took him out after. Talk to me quickly about the fielding. It has been very mixed from South Africa and Themba Bavuma as a whole. He dropped it at slip fielding, but Abidali's dismissal, which I'll
Oh,
just get onto
brilliant
pretty
fielding.
quickly. Yeah, we talk ironically, Abidali's favourite position is short leg and silly point, ended up getting out to an amazing catch by Kesha Maharaj. Maharaj, talk to me about South Africa's fielding? How did he make of it overall?
Well, I think it's an excellent point. It seemed a bit flat. And when you think of South Africa, they play really hard, ferocious, fast-paced cricket, and that includes their fielding. And in this series, I was talking earlier with some South African fans, nobody really expected it. They looked very, what to say, almost lethargic in the field. And when you think of South Africa, they are a team which commands the field. They're one that's very much in your face, not in terms of like to Australia's extent per se with the sledging, but with regards to just the fast tempo and the actual energy that they bring in the field. And that just seems to be lacking. It seems as though that loss in Karachi, even though it's only a two-match series, completely sucked the life out of them. So in that regard, I was very, very disappointed from South Africa's perspective. And not only that, it just, again, the energy in the field, not just the drop catches, not just the missed opportunities, but again, just slumped shoulders, not great body language. They just looked a defeated team, as I said, on those first 3 days. I think on day four, they did bring it back because of that partnership between Markham and van der Dusen. But yeah, overall, in terms of the fielding, very, very disappointing from a Proteas perspective.
Let's touch on that very quickly. You said the word lethargic. I used terms like gassed out, just the energy was very low. This happened in the first test as well. For me, I felt like this was evident in the first test. It was almost as if the scales tipped towards Pakistan slightly, and it was like everything was taken out of them. Do you think it was a case of just how the conditions did it to him, just put him out? But you know, South Africa comes from they have hot conditions themselves. So it's not a case of like New Zealand, but why do you think the reason was? Because I think it was very, very interesting. I have no idea myself.
Same here, to be honest, Mo. I'm going to be honest. I've been watching South African cricket for many, many years now, even this particular team, and they rarely look so low in the field. But to be honest, I don't think it was so much the conditions. I'm going to be brutally honest. I don't think it was that with the South Africa team. I think it was almost the external factors leading up to this series. Because this is a team that has struggled to win. They've won 3 out of their past 13 games now, because this is now extended with this loss today. And in addition to that, they've got a terrible, terrible record in Asia. They've lost 9 straight test matches in Asia, which it's going to play on the psyche. It doesn't matter how strong of a cricketer you are. And as I said, Aidan Markham, van der Dusen, Onrik Nokia as well, George Linder, who played on with an injury. They showed a lot of grit, a lot of fight. And Themba Bavuma, of course, as well. We'll touch upon him in a bit. But I just feel like this South Africa team just look mentally shot. Maybe it's because of the whole issue with the Quinton de Kock captaincy, the uncertainty there, the lack of clarity in the actual game plan heading into this series. But again, to be honest, I can't really lay a specific finger on it. It seems to be multiple external factors, and every single one of them create the perfect storm for Pakistan to go on and win this series 2-0.
Yeah, we talk about external factors. Do you know, I haven't read into it too much, I haven't really had the time to be honest. Do you know what the whole thing is around South Africa's board? Because I heard it's in the bit of a mix-up right now.
It always seems to be. I'm going to be honest, there are so many suspensions. It is the quote-unquote cricketing carousel, per se, cricket South Africa. There are instabilities with the board. There has been for so many years now. There was a whole issue with the CEO of South Africa. Jacques Forlu has obviously now departed from the Proteas setup. So yeah, it's multiple factors. Potentially that could be another thing, because there's uncertainty in the actual country itself. But again, it's just it's a multitude of factors. I don't think it's one particular one, but they really need to sort this out, because the next test series is months away now. They have time to really rebuild, rethink, get the think tank together and really organise a strategy that's going to take South African cricket forward. Because this series, I mean, don't get me wrong, they battled. They fought really well. I thought they fought well in Karachi and they battled in Rawalpindi. But to be honest, we don't expect that from a South African team, which, to be honest, should have showed a lot more fight and a lot more character at times.
100%, I agree. I think, and looking at the South African side, it's not a case of, you know, they're transitioning. They're not really transitioning, to be honest. There aren't too many players. We're looking at, you know, if I just scroll through the scorecard in itself, Dean Elgar, veteran, Aidan Markram, very much establishing himself in the side, 100 in the second inning. Mm-hmm. Van der Dusen, who, again, from one of the players I personally look at and I really like. I like Aidan Markram and Van der Dusen. They're probably one of my favourite players in Zafran side. Faf du Plessis, a veteran. Themba Bavuma, pretty much one of the more established middle order players in there. Quinton de Kock, established. Mulder and Linda, you know, they're still working their way inside. That's two players. We've got experienced Keshav Maharaj, tons of wickets to his name. Kagiso Rabada, arguably one of the best bowlers in the world right now. And Anrik Nautia, who, you know, just puts pressure on the it's a wild statement, but I like to compare him to, I don't know, a Cummins or a Hazelwood in the impact he has on his team, the role he plays. Anyway, but you know, that's not a development side by any means. So it was surprising to me that happened. Let's go through the scorecard like we said again. Azarali a duck to an LBW. Their attitude towards the spin. It looked a little off. If I'm being honest, you know, Barbarazm is someone, you know, we're talking about Pakistan, there's a load of spinners, they're spinning wickets there. Not necessarily Rawalpindi, but Karachi offers that. Barbarazm looked a little bit off with this spin play, unless the ball was pitched outside the stumps or it was pitched short. Those are the times you'd capitalize on it. But when Keshav Maharaj is really digging in and we're bowling that nagging line length that a left arm spinner does, he did look a little startled and he was forced to come forward and attack and try and relieve some of that pressure off him. Azarali got caught out pretty early, LBW. Barber and Fawad put up a pretty nice partnership. 77 from Barber and Fawad, 45. Fawad probably looked a hell of a lot more comfortable against spin. He got out to a great dismissal by Temba Bavuma, I think it was. They were comparing it to David Warner's run out. What do you think on Pakistan's approach against spin? Because we lost a fair few amount of wickets to Keshav Maharaj.
Well, yeah, I know, it's surprising, wasn't it, to be honest? I saw that a lot on Twitter as well, a lot of reactions with regards to this Pakistan team playing of spin. I don't really know why there was such an issue, to be honest. But Keshav Maharaj and George Linder as well. George Linder got his first ever fiver later on in the game.
Yeah.
I can't quite put my finger on it because, to be honest, they looked as though they were positive towards the spin, but they're just misjudging it at times. And when we talk about being aggressive, being counter-attacking, being proactive against spin, that isn't necessarily going out there, smashing the ball over to cow corner or smashing it to boundary. But it's in terms of strike rotation. It's about having a nice, solid front foot defence, for example, knowing when to leave the ball. And at times, I feel like Pakistan definitely were missing in that department. It was a bit disappointing, but fortunately, as you said, Babrazam. I mean, it wasn't vintage Babar by any chance. Let's not forget, he's still coming off an injury. There'll be plenty of occasions for Babar to go out there and be his world-beating self. Okay, no doubt about it. But as you said, Fahd Alam, fantastic. Fahim Ashraf as well. Real standout in this test match and in this series, to be honest, as a whole. So yeah, overall, it's a cause for concern. Something that definitely needs to be addressed heading into future series. But fortunately, in this particular series, their batsmen were able to see them across the line.
Yeah, I'm going to take you right towards the top order just for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
There was a statement made by Mohammad Yaseem, if I'm not wrong, saying that Imamul Haq is not ready to be playing Red Bull cricket. Now, that's a big statement.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of context about Mohammad Yaseem, if you guys don't know, the new selector put in place after Misbah Haq was either dropped or taken off, but he was Misbah Haq was playing both chief selector and head coach, which is a massive responsibility. I'm not even going to get into too much how I feel about Misbah Haq, because personally I still want Mickey Arthur there. People know, if you guys know me, you know how I feel about Pakistan's coaching system. I want Mickey Arthur back, but we're not going to get into that. Fact of the matter is, we've got Misbah Haq. I don't see him going anytime soon, to be honest. The way Pakistan's performance is, there's no reason to take him off. But you know how Pakistan is, they'll just do it for the fun of it, to be honest. Mohammad Yaseem put in, loves to use his presentations, loves to nitpick the players in his conferences. He made the statement, Imamul Haq is not ready for Red Bull cricket. We've got Abid Ali, Imran Butt, Shaun Masood is out purely because of form. And Imamul Haq is an injury. Who had the same injury as Barber, just hasn't recovered yet, to be honest. Do you think Imamul Haq will make it back into the test side if Imran Butt provides a couple decent knocks? Because I personally want him to be. I love the way he is. He's sort of the epitome of a classic opening batsman in Test cricket. He has all the technical stuff. He doesn't go smacking it around. He plays a proper batsman's role, if you say. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I suppose it is a question which hasn't really been answered in this series. Another one, isn't it, with regards to that Pakistan, in particular the openers. Abid Ali didn't have a great series. And Imran Butt, to be honest, he showed promise at times. Yeah. I will give him that. I see exactly what you're talking about, Mo, with regards to his technical assurance in his game. He did look quite good at times. But again, he was just getting these starts and then something just went wrong and he got out. It's as simple as that. It was a massive shame. So for the time being, before we talk about Imamul Haq, I would give Imran Butt a bit more time. I'm not one for giving a player one or two games here and then, unless it's conditions dependent, because I did say on the last podcast with regards to Pindy and Narman Ali, who of course had a fantastic game. But with regards to an opening batsman, you need to show faith in them. And I feel like with Imran Butt, he's definitely got the raw potential, but it's just about how patient are Pakistan going to be with him. Are they going to allow him to have another one or two games and then drop him? Or are they going to give him a consistent run of games in this team? And for me, I hope they choose the latter. As I said, from what I've seen from him, there's definitely promise. But the issue is, who's going to partner him? Because if Abid Ali, who had a fantastically searing start to Test match cricket with a century, yeah. And then, of course, it's just all dipped since then. He seems to be really struggling to get past these 50-plus scores, sometimes even 30-plus scores in games. Again, it is just that instability. And potentially, Imam Al-Haq could be drafted in. He could be at some point. With regards to him not being ready for Red Bull cricket just yet, it depends. It does depend. From what that means to me, how I interpret that, that says to me that they're willing to go with Imran Butt for a bit longer. And then if that particular experiment doesn't pay off, then Imam, after honing his craft in Red Bull cricket, will probably be the next in line, the successor per se for Imran Butt's place, or if not Shan Masood. Yeah. So for me, I feel like for the time being, that does show Pakistan's intent. So for the time being, Imran Butt or Abid or Shan, whoever is going to be out of those three, will be the top two. But I don't think that that particular statement completely rules out Imam Al-Haq entirely. I just feel like for the time being, they're going to go with a combination of those guys. And then if it doesn't pay off, Imam Al-Haq will come into the team at some point.
Nice. So that kind of covers that. And we'll go into the middle order. Mohammad Rizwan, 18 of 68. And he got out to a nick. In all honesty, I'm not worried about Mohammad Rizwan. I think this guy is honestly... he's ticking off every single boxes that you can ask for from a keeper batsman. He's great behind those stumps. I think I was looking at a stat which showed him very much at the top of the list in terms of catch completion. And with the bat, you know, he just plays a proper innings. He knows when to put the strike rate up when he needs to. He knows when to slow it down when he needs to. But that's obviously not an issue. Fahim Ashraf, I want to touch upon again. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned it so many times. I've mentioned him aside from change of pace. I mentioned it to you probably 3-4 times. I mentioned it with Will. Fahim Ashraf looking like a genuine all-rounder right now across T20 and Test. We'll see how he does in ODIs, but we're looking at two amazing comebacks, Hasan Ali and Fahim Ashraf right now. This is a 78-run innings in the first Test, in the first innings.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of it, man? Because Yunus Khan mentioned he's attempting to make him into a genuine all-rounder who has the ability to bat, and he's doing that. You know, he's had the quick knocks where he's had that 90 against New Zealand where he scored it quite a lot at boundaries, but in this one we're looking at a 48 strike rate, a hell of a lot of patience, grit, so he knows what role to play when he needs to. Tell me your thoughts on Fahim Ashraf as a whole.
Well, I am absolutely chuffed to pieces that you've given me this question, Mo. I really am, because I got his stats for the series. 171 runs at an average of 85.5, Pakistan's leading run scorer. And you mentioned about strike rate as well. His strike rate is 58.36. And I'm really glad. I'm so, so glad for him, because I like Fahim Ashraf. Love watching him in the PSL. I felt like he did have a lot of potential on the red ball as well. And he's proving it so far. The key there is so far. Because as with any other cricketer, there will be times when he struggles. And Pakistan fans need to realise that. But the key is the potential is there. You mentioned about his ability to dig in, the grit, the fortitude, a Fawad Alam-esque innings, if you please. It shows a lot of versatility in his game. And that is one of the most important attributes that a Test cricketer can possess, in particular in the middle order. It's that ability to dig in, as he did, and I think he did it brilliantly in comparison to Karachi, where it's a lot more free-flowing, smashing boundaries all over the place, which again was a fantastic knock. But it's that ability to dig in when you've got a proper partner next to you. And then when the tail comes in, that's when it goes. That's when the fingers click, you go from 0 to 100 and the batsman accelerates. So for me, for Fahim Ashraf, massive, massive tick next to his name. I thought he was absolutely sensational in this series. You could argue maybe in terms of the bowling could produce a bit more. We know that he's capable of it with regards to his line and length. I think we'll see a lot more of that, obviously, in more seam favourable conditions, maybe outside of Pakistan and Asia itself. But yeah, I mean, if you're a Pakistan fan, there's a little reason to be a bit optimistic about him, because if you can have a genuine all-rounder in that team providing you with these not even 50 plus scores, but a quick 40, a quick 45, 50, 60, maybe 70 plus scores he got in this particular Test match, it really does make a difference. It makes a tremendous difference, and it really shores up that middle order. So for me, Fahim Ashraf, I'm absolutely buzzing for him. Fantastic to see him get some plaudits. And in my opinion, he was a very, very standout player in this particular series.
100%. You know, look, now I've really realised that now after looking at the series, I think he plays for Islamabad United in the PSL.
Mm-hmm.
It's really made me think, you know, Lahore could definitely use someone like him. We have David Reza, who sort of doesn't offer the pace as much, but he offers, you know,
the bat.
He really utilises the cutters, and he's coming very, very handy for Lahore. Mm-hmm. Someone like Fahim could really propel us and really potentially take us to the win. We'll see how it goes. I want to ask you a question quickly. How long or how many more tests or how many more series do you think Fahim Ashraf needs before we're allowed to put him verbally up there with, you know, the likes of, you know, Chris Wokes, Sam Curran? How long? Because, you know, he's played South Africa, Kagiso Rabada, Anrik Nortia. He's played New Zealand and provided very similar knocks in terms of performances, where he's facing Trent Bolt, Neil Wagner, and Tim Southee. How many more, which series do you think he needs to be playing until he starts potentially getting put in those same categories?
That's a very, very interesting question. I feel like in terms of matches, I'd say double digits at least. I don't think you can really judge a player. I mentioned there with Imran Butt. Imran Butt could have a fantastic series next one if they choose to select him. He could not. That's just how the game is. It's a roller coaster. You have ebbs and flows to a career. So for me, in terms of matches, he'd have to play at the very least 10 or 12 before we could really start comparing him to those very, very good, solid, dependable all-rounders in world cricket right now. In terms of a series, I understand your point, actually. That New Zealand series in particular, against four of arguably the world's best seamers right now, Trent Bolt.
His first test series back as well.
Exactly. And in very, very seam favourable conditions as well. The ball was swinging all over the place in New Zealand. And he was facing the likes of Carl Jameson, who's averaging 13 in test cricket, which is mind-blowing on its own. Neil Wagner, who is the enforcer, someone who potentially could be likened to a couple of the Pakistani seamers in the future. Could be an interesting one. And then, of course, with regards to Tim Southee, Trent Bolt, they've been doing it for years. So, yeah, I was very, very impressed overall with Fahim Ashraf. In terms of a particular series, you'd have to argue an England series or an Australia series in terms of performing against them. If he could do that in particular away from Pakistan itself, then, yeah, he's got to be up there, isn't he? He really is.
Pakistan put up 272 in their first innings. We're not going to go into too much. I think, you know, given the conditions, there's a couple of decent knocks. I think that was a par score with the conditions there. As you said, Rawalpindi, the conditions weren't as much as people expected, but we'll go on to South Africa's knock. Not too many great performances, 201 all out. No one past the 50 mark. Themba Bavuma putting in a very, very long shift, 44 for 138. Strike rate of 31. But apart from that, everyone really just collapsed, really. We'll talk about, I want to ask you both what part A to the question is. What did you make of South Africa's innings? Where did you feel they went wrong? And secondly, how much of it do you think is dependent upon that spell, that innings from Hasan Ali, 5 wickets on his first innings back or second test back for international cricket? So give me your takes on those.
Well, I think it's a mix of both, to be honest, Mo. As you mentioned there, Hasan Ali, again, someone who I'm really happy to see perform. It's a brilliant comeback story. It really is. And you see this Pakistan team, it's full of these wonderful narratives. Hasan, Fawad Alam, who deserves a film to be written about him. Can't wait to watch that in cinemas at some point in the future. And of course, Fahim Ashraf as well. All of these stories are now developing in Pakistan. It's wonderful to see. So in terms of that particular spell, of course, that was a major factor in limiting South Africa to 201 runs. With regards to the Proteas themselves, one massive, massive thing in that innings was a lack of communication in the running. When you think in a first innings, in particular in Asia, where you need first innings runs, that is like gold dust. You can win or lose a match in your first innings total on an Asian pitch. And unfortunately, they had two runouts and two not great runouts either. I mean, don't get me wrong, sharp pieces of fielding from Pakistan, in particular Shaheen Shah Afridi's one, which just launched in like an absolute bullet. I thought that was a fantastic throw. But in terms of those two runouts, they were absolutely killer to South Africa's momentum. Then, of course, with regards to that special Hassan Ali spell, it was mind-blowing. It really was. I loved watching it. He was steaming in. He looked like the Hassan Ali of old. And he just pinned them on the back foot. And to be honest, with regards to South Africa themselves, you could argue they were maybe a bit tentative at times. And then at the same time, overly aggressive at times when they could have dug in. There just didn't seem to be much control and flow to their innings. Other than Will Mulder, who I think was excellent. 33, of course, did get dismissed. How many balls did he face? I think about 80 or 83 Will Mulder faced in terms of his... 83 in terms of his innings. And Temba as well. I thought Temba really did fight. Again, the only thing, if I really had to criticise Temba, even though I don't want to because I do like his batting, was potentially with the tail. We mentioned there with Fahim Ashraf and his ability to kick on. Potentially Temba could have done that just to get a few more runs towards the end. But overall, in terms of South Africa's first innings, disappointing again. And unfortunately, it set the tone for the rest of this test match.
Yeah, Pakistan went in with a 70-odd run lead. We're at home. They didn't, apart from the top order, you know, the bottom order looked pretty comfortable with going ahead and scoring. And that kind of history sort of repeated itself to an extent into the second innings. Imran Butt, zero in this innings. Abid Ali, 13. Azhar Ali, 33, got a few more runs. Babar Azam got caught out. LBW, which is, you know, the point that I stuck on before, where I said that, you know, Babar Azam looked a bit off with his spin. When Keshav Maharaj was really looking to dig in with his high, good line and length, Babar Azam looked a little bit uncomfortable. You could see that he definitely looked like someone who wanted to face, who prefers to face pace, and that's clearly evident in the way he bats as well. But Fawad Alam caught out early. Mohammad Rizwan is obviously the standout innings. 298, 115 of those, which is about 40% of those runs. Scored by Mohammad Rizwan, 56 strike rate, 115 of 204. Like I said, we're looking at, in my opinion, honestly, without trying to be as unbiased as possible, I think we're looking at one of the best keeper batsmen in the world. In terms of both, we're looking at both catching and batting performances. So what did you make? First of all, part A, what did you make of his innings? Secondly, do you agree with that statement that I just made?
I knew that was coming, Mo. With regards to part A of your particular question, if I had to sum it up in a word, I'd say sublime. It really was. 115 not out. And again, it comes back to batting with the tail. It was versatility. It was the ability to adapt his game to the situation. He dug in alongside the likes of Fahim Ashraf, alongside the likes of Fahd Alam, for example. But as soon as it came down to the likes of Hassan Ali, Yasir Shah, Noman Ali, he had the ability to not hog the strike, but, you know, maintain the majority of the strike, make sure that he is taking control of the innings. And he did that in absolutely sensational fashion alongside the tail. So for me, massive tick again for Mohammad Rizwan. And against somebody, this is another brilliant story, because I remember Mohammad Rizwan in terms of his international presence in around 2018. And I looked at him and thought, my goodness, he's a fantastic wicketkeeper in terms of technical ability against both pace and spin. He's a brilliant wicketkeeper. But the thing that let him down was inconsistencies with the bat. And that was both in white ball cricket and domestic red ball cricket as well for me with regards to Rizwan. He'd get a start and then just completely throw it away. But nowadays, look how much more composed, assured. And one massive thing with Rizwan's game, which I absolutely love nowadays, is his confidence. He walks around as though he owns that pitch. And to have a guy like that alongside Babar Azam, alongside Shaheen Shah Afridi, is again gold dust. So for me, massive, massive tick. I cannot stress that enough for the listeners out there and the viewers watching this on YouTube, because it was a fantastic innings and one that is a brilliant, brilliant way to get underway in terms of your first ever international century. Then in terms of part B to your question, Mo, which is a very, very interesting one, in terms of wicketkeeping technique, he's definitely up there. Okay, I'd put him up there with the likes of Quinton de Kock, BJ Watling from New Zealand, and maybe Joss in terms of the overall package. I know Joss has had his issues against spin in the past. So I'd say he's probably up there as maybe top four in the world. With that being said, though, Rizwan, if he continues this incredible vein of form, which he showed in the England series, where again, he had an outstanding series there. He was brilliant again in this particular series. He was Pakistan's third leading run scorer. If he continues this upward trajectory, he could be top three, if not top two. We'll have to wait and see, Mo. Obviously, I'm not going to curse him or jinx him. But yeah, overall, Mohammad Rizwan, an incredible player and someone who I absolutely love watch batting and keeping.
100%. We've got some comments. I always mention them very quickly after, but Yeah, Muhammad Rizwan, he confidence is a yeah was a good thing. I forgot to say that, but you know, he plays both pace and spin with the same amount of confidence. He doesn't look like he's startled against either. When he's playing spin, he knows how to maneuver the field and get around for those runs. When he's playing pace, he knows how to get those quick runs. He has that ability. I think when, like you said, 2018 was when I think he played a couple games. He was both second string to Sarfraz Ahmed, who had his dominance for quite a while. Wasn't performing all the time with the bat, but I think his captain presence, I think, which is what referred to as a lot, brought Pakistan a fair amount of success. I think, you know, we went to number one in T20 rankings because of him. We won the Champions Trophy and that sort of stuff. I think Rizwan just kind of was waiting second, was playing second fiddle for a pretty long time. Pakistan didn't really have any keepers aside from that. So yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, like you said, I wouldn't, in terms of, we're looking at the overall keeping class right now. New Zealand has BJ Watling, Australia has Tim Payne. I definitely rank him above Tim Payne. Jos Buttler, I think, just is a more established version of Muhammad Rizwan. I think Muhammad Rizwan's a bit better at playing spin, so I guess it's a waiting game, as you said, with Muhammad Rizwan. So let's quickly touch on the comments. You got Habib, big up you. Tariq Mansour, Babar Azam is a starting player. You can't keep him out of the game for long. I agree. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the best batsmen in the world. He's like top five, top five batsmen in the world. I don't think right now, obviously, he hasn't put up all the performances compared to the guys who are excelling at the moment. Kane Williamson, Steve Smith, Virat Kohli, and Joe Root with back-to-back double hundreds. But, you know, Babar Azam is just a matter of time. He's come back from an injury. Just give him a little bit of time. He'll be right back. Mm-hmm. We're looking at another knock, which I think fell under the radar. Numan Ali, 45 of 78. Now, I'll tell you why I feel like this is an amazing knock, because look at his first-class records. That guy doesn't bat. And to go to a step up against the likes of Kavisa Rabada, Anrik Nautia, a lot of Kishan Maharaj, George Lindell with his, you know, medium-paced swingers, that's a pretty decent knock, you know, in my opinion. You've got a couple sixes, couple fours, six fours, two sixes, that strike rate of 57. So he wasn't messing around. What do you make of Numan Ali as a whole? You know, we're looking at some very decent left-arm spin performances and a couple decent bat performances when you need to. And I'm going to ask you a question after about him as well.
Absolutely fine with me, Mo. I'm happy to answer questions about Numan, because again, he impressed me. Had a fantastic series, and I think he was really buoyed in terms of his confidence from the Cardiff Arm Trophy. He took 61 wickets, I believe, for Northern, which was a fantastic haul for him as a left-arm spinner, second only behind Sajid Khan, who had a fantastic tournament as well. But in terms of this particular series, I love the way, and this is Karachi as well, not in just this game, but the way in which he complimented Yasir Shah. So Yasir Shah, of course, is more aggressive, more attacking option, goes to the googly a lot more with regards to his leg spin. He looks for wickets by bowling stump to stump. Then you have Numan Ali, who's a bit of a wily character. That's how I like to describe him. He's someone who's very shrewd with his economy rate, and he just holds up an end perfectly. He just finds a length, a line, and in addition to that, he really changes up his pace well as well. I noticed that in this particular game. He got the ball to grip a little bit, which is very impressive from a fellow, obviously not as talented spinner, but being myself. But of course, in terms of this particular series, he stood out, and I'm glad that you mentioned his batting, because that was, let's face it, not the most aesthetically pleasing innings. Okay, there were times where he did look a bit suspect, but he's a number 10 batsman. And as you said, nobody expected that. 45, he was beautiful with the slog sweep as well. Used that to perfection at times in this particular innings against the likes of Lindo Maharaj. But yeah, overall, I think he really stood out. Again, another standout player like Fahim Ashraf, like Fahad Alam, like Mohammad Rizwan, who really stood up. And in terms of Pakistan's tail in general, just want to give them all a massive shout out really for their batting. Second innings in Karachi, they scored 70. Okay, that was massive. That changed the game. That changed the entire outlook of that second innings and that run chase for South Africa. Second innings for South Africa. And then with regards to this, they did change the run chase. Because if you looked at South Africa today, okay, at one point they were 241 for three. Without Numan Ali's knock, without Yasir Shah's knock, without Hassan Ali, fair enough, he didn't really get many. But even without his short number of runs and Shaheen Shah Afridi's runs as well, if you took all of those away, South Africa would have been looking at around about 310, 320. And there is a massive difference between having seven wickets in hand, chasing 80, and 7 wickets in hand, chasing 130. So that was absolutely huge. And I think in terms of Pakistan's lower order, they really, really stood up when their team needed them in this series.
100%. We'll go on to the next part of the game. Sorry, lost my words for a second. We've got Pakistan put up, I think, what was the lead that they needed? We had, do you remember the lead that they put up for South Africa? It's about 300.
In terms of the target itself, it was 370. So they had a lead of 369.
Any point think that Pakistan had a chance of South Africa, sorry, had a chance of pulling together. You know, Aidan Malcolm did offer that, have that big knock of 118, but we needed the middle order and potentially the tail end, the all rounders to step up a little. Did you think that South Africa really had any chance of pushing it for a draw? Maybe.
I did. I actually thought that they could have won. They have the capability, but unfortunately, they just didn't have the form in this test match. And again, comes down to potentially that mental pressure. Because before this test match, they'd lost 8 in a row. I mean, that in itself is a tremendous record. I mean, it's an unwanted record as well for those Proteas boys going in to Pakistan for a very, very tough series against a very dynamic Pakistan team, to say the least. They are very, very entertaining with their cricket. But in terms of their batsmen, I look at 3 key performers. Okay, and I know Dean Elgar, of course, went out early. He deserves a bit more lenience, a bit more slack, because he has been one of the world's most consistent opening batsmen. But 2 men in this particular series who I thought would really, really stand up for their side when they needed them, because I'm a massive fan of both of them, are Faf du Plessis and Quinton de Kock. And unfortunately, in this series, it's funny that we're mentioning about Noman Ali, because Noman Ali, at number 10, outscored them in the series, which it's a baffling stat from a South African perspective. It's one which is incredibly unwanted, and it just shows how poor of a form those guys... I mean, I talk about form, though. I mean, Du Plessis scored 199 in the last series, and then in this particular test match, just never looked comfortable. Didn't look comfortable against Yasir Shah. Yasir Shah had him on absolute strings. And then, of course, Hassan Ali and Shaheen Shafridi bowled brilliantly in Rawalpindi. So with regards to South Africa themselves, I thought they had a chance. I really did. You go into the hotel after day 4. Your team's on 127 for 1. You've got Aidan Markram looking brilliant out there in the inning, in the middle. You've got Rassie van der Dusen looking stern and resolute as ever. And then you head into the morning session of day 5. Rassie falls after 3 deliveries. Faf goes relatively quickly afterwards. You have a fantastic rebuilding phase with Aidan Markram, who looked in great touch. Temba Bavuma, who offered a lot of fortitude, a lot of grit with his particular innings. And then as soon as Markram went, it was like a tower of Jenga. I mean, it was unreal. That was an extraordinary collapse. 6 for 33. 6 for 33. It's baffling even just saying that. Because they were in this game. Even when Markram got out, they still had the batsman. You have Quinton de Kock, okay, who down that order at number 7, where I think he's probably suited his best, he averages over 50. And an informed Quinton de Kock, this would have been a perfect scenario for him to come in, score quick 50, 60 runs alongside Temba Bavuma. But unfortunately, it didn't pay off again. And then I do give credit to Rian Mulder. I give credit to George Linder, 2 upcoming all-rounders who did show a bit of fight, a bit of resistance. But again, Pakistan just turned the screw beautifully. I thought the likes of Shaheen Shah Afridi and Hassan Ali bowled tremendously well. And overall, what looked as though a result could be forced for South Africa became a very, very one-sided affair indeed.
Yeah, that kind of covers the test as a whole. I want to quickly go with some sort of outro reflection kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We look at Pakistan's pace attack. You know, Hassan Ali is now back. He's someone who can bowl with both the new ball, but can also go with the ball when it's slightly older, mm-hmm. sort of the way Benny Mashraf gets given the ball as well. He's now in Darbish Khan. I don't really think he's really ever going to make his debut, unfortunately, but we won't talk on that too much. I want to talk about the 2 players who are left out. We've got Mohammad Abbas, Naseem Shah. Naseem Shah with a hell of a lot of years ahead of him. Mohammad Abbas is a bit of a ticking, is a bit time dependent, in my opinion, Mohammad Abbas. He hasn't got a crazy amount of years ahead of him. That being said, he bowls 120 clicks, so it's not a case of him being crazily in form and fit as well. So, but that was the reason he was left out. They were both left out of form. I think Naseem had a little bit of an injury as well. Hassan Ali, 10 wickets in this test match. Do you see, if this carries on, which of the two players, because we're looking at, you know, in Pakistan, where we went more spin dominant, we had a couple of more spinners, but do you see if there's another spin option, pace option available, which of the two players do you think will make the cut? And Darbish Khan can be in the mix as well, if you genuinely feel like, but we're talking about Muhammad Abbas and Nassim Shah.
Yeah, I agree with Tabish Khan as well. I feel like he'll be in squads, but I think it'll be injury dependent with regards to his actual selection in the 11. So that is a very, very interesting question, Mo. It really is, because obviously two completely different ends of the pace spectrum in Nassim Shah, who bowls absolute heat, and Muhammad Abbas, who's very much like a county cricket seamer. There was a reason why he succeeded so much for Leicestershire in 2018. He was a brilliant bowler for the Foxes. For me, it depends on conditions, because if you're going somewhere really seam conducive, South Africa, for example, or Australia, you want Nassim Shah because of that X factor. You want that extra bit of pace. But the issue with him, again, he's a young seamer. He still has a lot to learn. You can't expect Nassim Shah to come onto the scene and be the next Waqar Yunus or Wasim Akram. It's just not, it's not going to be reality, unfortunately. It's going to take time. You need to invest in these young seamers. So it depends what direction Pakistan see themselves going in. If you want to invest in the youth, go with Nassim Shah. And as I said, in seam conducive conditions, I think he offers you a lot. With regards to Muhammad Abbas, it's an interesting one because I really like Muhammad Abbas. I think he's a fantastic seamer. I've said it there. He reminds me of many, many county seamers with regards to his ability to hit the line and length so consistently on a good length on a cricket pitch. The only issue with him is predictability. He got found out. He got found out all the way back in the last series in South Africa against Aidan Markram. Aidan Markram came out the crease and he started a trend. And we saw that in the England series. Dom Sibley did it. Joe Root did it. Joss Butler did it. And they did it with absolute perfection. And they completely nullified his greatest asset, which is the ability to pin a batsman on the back foot and bring the LBW into play. So with regards to Muhammad Abbas, it's completely up on him. If he can develop a short ball, I'm not saying this has to be a ridiculous, like, Nassim Shah 145 kph plus. That's not realistic. But even just a short ball, just to put the batsman back inside their crease, that is a start. Because if you're just going to offer that length time and time and time and time again, unless Rizwan's going to come up to the stumps, you've probably got better options in that Pakistan team. So for me, to answer your question, Mo, very much depend on the conditions. And with regards to Abbas himself, I feel like he just needs to adapt his game slightly. And if he can, who knows? He could be back in the team in no time.
Cool. That kind of covers the test, to be honest. I have the same feeling about that. You know, Pakistan has three pace options. Fahim Ashraf does have the ability to take wickets. But that being said, I see his role as being really just to put a cap on the things, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
The way he gets the ball when it's handed to him, he's getting it good 45 overs in. He's playing alongside the spinners. So I can't expect tons of wickets unless we're looking at a really crappy team, because he doesn't get a favorable ball. But that being said, he has been, I think, pretty successful in his bowling stint so far as well. We're looking at the T20 series against New Zealand, and his economy was between 5-7 in his comeback series, which is amazing in T20 cricket. We do look at the same here. He hasn't really gone for any runs. The really only person who went for a lot of runs was when I think Yasir Shah went for about four and a half and over in the first inning. So in that perspective, I really think Fahim Ashraf's taking all the boxes. Muhammad Abbas is just going to have to put in a few yards in domestic cricket to be able to get the call back, and then potentially play as a fourth seamer when we have seen favourable conditions, like you said. That kind of covers the test. I'm gonna do a separate episode, whether Aaron's on it or I do it solo. I haven't really decided yet. We'll see how it all goes. But that's the T20 series just coming up. Obviously, I think a three game T20 series. Just to finish off quickly, what I made of the test, I think the series as a whole, I think it just showed that, you know, Aidan Markram did have a few shaky knocks, but that being said, he has an extremely bright future in my opinion. Same for Van der Dusen. I didn't really see the main problems for me for South Africa was just really the middle order. Quinton de Kock, Faf du Plessis, which is ironically one of the more experienced players in the entire squad, they just looked a little bit off. And from Pakistan's point of view, I guess we all know what it is, which is the top order. And I guess injuries and stuff don't help with Imam Al-Haq, but it is what it is. We keep moving on. But that being said, at the very same time, I'm very happy with the way the middle order and bottom order is standing up. You know, I can look at Mohammed Rizwan and Taheem Ashraf, potentially Hassan Ali, depending on whether it's a T20 series, and look, you know, say if X, Y, and Z happen, which most of the time the end up does happening, we do get a bit of a collapse. I can look at them and say, you know, they're going to do the right thing. Mohammed Rizwan is so level-headed. Fahim Ashraf knows what he's doing. Fawad Alam knows what he's doing. And we can pull out a 250 score, a 300 score, if we really push. What did you make of the test series as a whole before we jump into the questions and finish off?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? So first of all, I want to say congratulations to Pakistan. Shabash. I have to say that. It was a brilliant, brilliant performance with both bat and ball in hand and in the field. Let's not forget that. Pakistan's fielding in the past has been questioned. And I feel like in this series, they really brought the energy. So for me, big tick. Well done to Pakistan. Fantastic series. From a South African perspective, unfortunately, they were heading into this series hoping that some of their questions would be answered. And instead, more questions appear to have popped up. So not the most ideal of series for the Proteas. But that being said, you mentioned Aidan Markram. He had a standout series. He's the leading run scorer from both teams. Look at the likes of George Zinder as well. Showed a lot of fight, a lot of character. Bowled with a dislocated pinky finger as well on his bowling hand, which, again, shows a lot of courage and valour on the Test arena. And, of course, Themba Bavuma yet again. Someone who's really standing up, showing he can be a leader in this South African team. So I think overall a bit disappointing for South Africa, of course. 9 Tests now in a row in Asia. That is definitely a monkey that they want to get off their back heading into their next series, which is months away now, unfortunately. But yeah, overall, the only thing that I will say about this series, I wish it was a 3-match series. I really do. I'm going to miss it. I really am going to miss waking up early in the morning, really sleep deprived, and watching Pakistan versus South Africa, because they are two of the most entertaining cricket nations on the entire planet. They really are. And it's because of that unpredictability. It's the enigmatic nature of their game. And it's just something as a neutral fan such as myself. I absolutely love it. It's intoxicating. So for me, overall, great, great series. Loved it. Just wish it would have been a 3-match series. But yes, we go into the T20i series. Looking forward to that as well. And of course, from a neutral perspective, wish best of luck to both sides heading into that series.
There's some other questions quickly before we close out. Tyreek Mansour is saying, asking for predictions in the England-India series, England-India game tomorrow. I think it's a day 5. Mm-hmm. I haven't really, in all honesty, I've been keeping up with some of the scorecards. I haven't really been able to watch it. I've just been really busy. But as far as I know, it's only 370 or 390 India do, and it's day 5. So England need, 9 wickets to win? Mm-hmm. From what I could see, you know, I reckon India can take out the draw. I don't think they're going to win. Pujara, Rishabh Pant, I think they have the ability to take it. I don't necessarily think, unless we get another miracle, they get another miracle knock from Rishabh Pant, who definitely has the ability to. I'm someone, I'll take it, that I questioned Rishabh Pant's mentality in Test cricket. I did think he was a little impatient, and it brought the likes of, you know, someone like Ridham and Saha to be a lot more attractive as a keeper batsman in the Test side. He's someone that I just favoured for more naturally, just because of Rishabh Pant. I think he lost his wicket at the start of his career a few silly times. That being said, if he provides another miracle lock like he does the last few Test matches, I think they very much have it in the bag. You're someone who's been keeping up with it. Very briefly, you know, just from your thoughts, how do you think it's going to be?
Well, obviously, I want an England win. That would be absolutely ideal. Perfect start to the series from an English perspective. Interesting you mentioned there about Rishabh Pant. He is the X factor tomorrow. If England get him out early, that's going to send a real shockwave through that Indian batting lineup. But again, I'm looking forward to day 5. How brilliant is it to have 3 consecutive Test matches go to day 5 when, let's not forget, 2019, 2020, there were nonsensical talks from the ICC suggesting 4-day Test matches. So that in itself is fantastic, should be a fantastic end to a brilliant series opener. And yes, hopefully, fingers crossed, from a very biased English fan's perspective, I do hope that England can get the job done. But even if we don't, fair play to India. And yes, I suppose we'll have to wait and see how that all pans out in Chennai.
Yeah. Habib Tariq says, South Africa is scheduled to play their next Test series in November. How awful is this? I mean, the big 3 are playing with each other. That brings sustainability of the game into questioning. You know, I've actually raised that question before on the Twitter timeline. Follow me if you haven't already. That being said, I think someone gave a really good answer. Like, I'm not going to be, I try to be as neutral as possible. I don't really like starting arguments, but I said that, and I got a good response from a guy who looked like he's been watching a lot of cricket for a fairly long time, and he talked about, you know, just the general, you know, cost of things, working around schedules and that sort of thing. So that gave me that perspective. It's really about what South Africa's board can arrange. You know, like we said before, I think, you know, South Africa's board is in a bit of a mess right now. Their next test series in November is what it is, I guess. The test championship is pretty much said and done. South Africa's won't be part of the finals. I think Australia is set to be, no, sorry, New Zealand is going to be in the finals for that at Lord's. So that being said, I wouldn't prioritize it around the championship so much, more towards just what they can arrange. What did you make of that? They said the big three, so we're referring to what, England, India, and Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really, you know, we're looking, if you look at their pay brackets and, you know, the people they can bring in, at the end of the day, they can pay pretty much $1 million dollars, pounds to each central contract, whereas, you know, Pakistan's paying, what, 35 grand. We're struggling with TV licenses. We've just got the Sky Sports deal just about, and South Africa, they've got Super Sport, but they're not exact. Again, they don't have dumps of money to be able to hand out. So, what do you make on that? He says that the next series is in November. How awful is it, Aaron?
Massive. Of course it is. We want to see South Africa playing Test cricket. Exact same with Pakistan. Same with the West Indies, Bangladesh. I love Test cricket. It's my bread and butter as an Englishman. It's the format that we all love here in England. And it is awful. Of course, they were scheduled to play Australia later this month in South Africa itself, but the series got postponed, which has brought a lot of questions, a lot of talk in South Africa and Australia, respectively. With regards to the whole big three argument, that is worth, I'd say, two or three podcast episodes. It's so complex, so in-depth with regards to the ICC's pay structure, with regards to the power and influence that each of these boards have. The only thing that I will say in defense of the ECB, okay, and I know at times the ECB hasn't been incredible, in particular with county cricket. But in terms of Test cricket, I don't think you can really argue against them. Because when you think of the series that England have played, we played the West Indies and Pakistan in 2020, as well as South Africa in South Africa itself. We just toured Sri Lanka. We're touring India as we record this podcast. We last toured Bangladesh in 2016. So that's now six nations that we played right there. We toured New Zealand in 2019. And we are scheduled to tour Pakistan as well in 2020. I know that's not Test cricket, but that's ODI and T20 later this year. So I don't think with regards to sustainability, you can really blame England. I feel like the majority of Test cricket in particular, in terms of the criticisms of the ICC and the power of the Cricket Australia and the BCCI, is with India and Australia. Because at the moment, as we've seen with this Test series in South Africa, and I can't go into too much detail because we'll be here for hours, but it does seem as though Cricket Australia hold the cards. And as an international cricketing body, that isn't ideal. You should not be having nations which can dictate when and when they don't play Test cricket. So that's all I have to say with regards to that matter. Fingers crossed, both teams can, of course, and the other teams, West Indies, Bangladeshes, Afghanistan, Ireland, can play more Test cricket in the future. But it probably won't happen anytime soon, given the current ICC structure, unfortunately.
So, Habib, hopefully that answered your questions. This has been Cricket Talks episode 18. We're on a very, very good roll right now. I checked up on the rankings as well. The goal for me at the end of the year is to be in the top 100, even if that's 100, I don't really care. But to make the top 100 in England, I know it's a very competitive podcast market. I then would compete with ESPN. You guys are doing pretty well. Caribbean Cricket Podcast, you shout out to them, they're doing their thing. So I checked up, I think we're 25th in New Zealand, which I'll take that.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, man, we're doing okay. Hopefully you guys are keeping up. I want to quickly drop a few handles. Follow Aaron's podcast if you haven't already. A load of interviews. If you want to talk about ex-cricketers and current cricketers, check his thing out. He just did one with Alex Tudor as well, I think. So go check his out. It's the Cricket, the County Cricket Podcast on all audio platforms, so check that out. This is Cricket Talks. It's available on all iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever you want, it's on there. Visuals are on this very same YouTube channel that Habib, Tariq, and all the other future listeners you're on. So check out the visuals to these. We've got a load of sick episodes coming up as soon as I can get the time to, really. But Yeah, this has been Cricket Talks episode 18. Aaron, thank you for coming on.
No problem, mate. You know I'm always up for it. And of course, to the viewers slash listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And do give Mo a follow because he's working hard. He's really working hard to become successful in the world of cricket podcasting. Give him a listen, give him a follow, give him a subscribe on YouTube. And yes, thank you very much for having me on, Mo. I've thoroughly enjoyed tonight's conversation.
Thank you, no problem. Tarek says quickly, Aaron, where can I DM you? It's the cricket connoisseur _. Let me see if I can get the caption on Instagram, so DM him on there. You should find that. But yeah, man, you've got a couple fans. This has been Cricket Talks episode 18. Thank you for jumping on. Like we said, follow the podcast. All interview series. Aaron obviously does, like, he's got hundreds. We've got loads. Go and check his out. I've got a few coming up with a range of people, not just cricketers. I heard that there's going to be a Conor McCurr net battle coming up in the summer once COVID clears up with Cricket Talks. But yeah, I've got some exciting stuff coming up. Make sure you stay tuned. And I'll see you guys on the next episode of Cricket Talks.